This is a WATD Political Forum on 95.9 WATD, online at 95.9WATD.com. Now, live from Studio B, here's your moderator, WATD's Christine James.
Welcome to a WATD Political Forum. I'm your moderator, Christine James, joined by reporter Tom Gorman, asking questions with us tonight. This election race is for the 6th Plymouth District. We have candidates in studio here. We got the Democrat, Becky Coletta, and Republican, Ken Sweezy, right here in studio to answer questions. Good evening.
Good evening.
Timing you all is Charlie Fulmer, and we're joined by media partner Local Scene PAC TV. Now, our format is simple. We ask the candidates to have prepared opening and closing statements ready, no longer than 2 minutes for the open, on a 1 minute close, please. Then we do a round of questions from the reporters. Answers are limited to a minute. Then we have our lightning round, where answers are either yes or no, or two sentences tops. The reporter will say what kind of an answer they want. Also, please try and keep your answers to around a minute. If you consistently go over, ramble, or start to repeat yourself, then you get the bell. As we just went over with our candidates beforehand, Charlie, here is timing. Green means go, yellow means you have 10 seconds, and red means stop, you're done. Now, if you're still talking, you get the 5 second grace countdown. If you're still talking, you get the bell, and if you're still talking after that, we cut your mics. So on that cheery note, let's get started. And just so I make sure that I have this right, if you're not sure if you do live in the 6th Plymouth District, 6th Plymouth District is all of Duxbury, Halifax Precinct 2, Hanson Precincts 2 and 3, Marshfield Precincts 2A and 4, and Pembroke Precincts 1, 2, 3A, 4, and 5. Okay, that's a lot to remember. But these folks know it. And we're going to get started now with our opening statements. And we drew the order. Well, Tom picked the order here out of the official stand-in newsroom koozie. And we are going to begin with our opening statements with Becky, then go to Ken, and then we switch it at the end because that's how we do it. And let's start with opening statements. 2 minute, please. Becky Coletta.
Good evening, everyone. I want to thank WATD, our moderators, for hosting this forum, my opponent for being here tonight, and all those listening at home. My name is Becky Coletta, and I'm running to be the next state representative of the 6th Plymouth District. First and foremost, I'm a mom who knows what it's like to weather life's ups and downs. I've lived, worked, and raised a family in this district for the past 21 years. I'm also a community member. In 2003, my husband and I moved to Hanson, where I first set our roots down in this district. I immediately got involved using my communications background to help create the Whitman-Hanson Cable Access Corp. Since then, I've been elected 4 times, including the Hanson Select Board, the Pembroke Select Board, and twice to the Planning Board in Pembroke. I was appointed as the Pembroke Delegate to the Old Colony Planning Council, where I currently serve as president. I also joined the Hanson Kiwanis Club and volunteered for 10 years on the Human Rights Committee of Road to Responsibility. I also have a diverse professional background. Since graduating from NYU Law, I've been an attorney for 34 years, working for small and large businesses and individuals. For 10 years, I was part of the team that built the world's first private international satellite system. I was also counsel to a coastal engineering firm that did post-disaster recovery and flood management. I also earned a master's in social work from Bridgewater State. As a business owner, I served on the South Shore Women's Business Network and have worked to support small businesses in our region for many years. Most recently, I served as counsel at the State House in the Committee for Labor and Workforce Development. My experience in business, local government, and social work has equipped me with a unique perspective. I'm running for this office because I love this district and I want to bring my lived experience to work for you and make government work for us to strengthen our communities. I want to work to develop solutions to address our region's affordability issues, stand up for reproductive rights, improve access to healthcare, and protect the coastline, rivers, and ponds in our towns.
Thank you very much. That was the opening statement, Becky Coletta. Thank you. Ken Sweezy, your opening statement.
Yes, thank you. I want to echo the sentiments. Thank you to Tom and Christine, everyone here at WATD, Local Scene, for putting this on, my opponent as well. Always good to discuss the issues and make sure that everybody's voting informed. A little bit about myself and my background. I did grow up here in the district, grew up in Hanson. My family operated a local small business over in Whitman, Sweezy Fence. So spent much of my high school and college years putting up signs on your fence post. You might see them around. So I've had signs out in the district for a long time, you could say. Did that for a long time. you know, played my ball at Boteri Field and grew up in Hanson and enjoyed all our local resources, local businesses, everything like that growing up. It's a great place to grow up. I went on to get my bachelor's degree in forensic science and became a civilian law enforcement employee in St. Louis for the Metropolitan Police Department, excuse me. I was there for 4 years, worked on, unfortunately, hundreds of homicides, assaults, robberies, hundreds, if not a thousand, property crimes as well. And what really inspired me to get involved in the political scene was seeing the COVID response and rising crime rates and see what so-called leadership can do to the people on the ground when leadership is failing and really coming up short. So I really saw that, you know, a mayor and a circuit attorney that was not doing their job was, you know, blacklisting police officers and having do not prosecute lists and a lot of radical ideas that you see popping up across the country. And I decided that I needed to get to a system level to make some change and to help as best that I could. So I decided to move back and join the private sector in Massachusetts in 2021. I worked briefly for an engineering firm before joining the biotech industry where I am today, which is obviously one of the largest and most booming in Massachusetts. Volunteered on economic development as well as capital improvements for the town of Hanson. Ran in 22, was the Republican nominee for this seat as well. Won 2 out of our 5 towns, and I'm starting with a really good base of support here. So looking forward to discussing the issues tonight.
Thank you very much. They're the opening statements from the candidates. That was just Ken Sweezy. Now I'm going to go to Tom Gorman. Questions for the candidates tonight.
Well, you know, the migrant crisis continues to be a huge issue, not only in the country, but right here on the South Shore. How would you address this?
Let's start with Becky.
So when we look at the migrant crisis, a big part of that issue is a federal issue. And the bipartisan border bill that was negotiated and then scrapped in February, I think it was, would have gone a long way to solving this crisis. And honestly, I do believe that come November 5th, it will no longer be a political football, and the federal government will do something. We desperately need them to do something. Here we had the right to shelter law, which has cost us a lot of money. But the reason it's cost us a lot of money is multifaceted. Part of it is we need the federal government that controls the border to take responsibility for funding the consequences of its border control policy by funding the cost to the states, fully funding cost to the states. But the bigger issue that I found out last year is that when people come into this country with legal status, they don't have a right to work. And that right to work can take, right now, a year and a half. They've been trying to, at the federal and state level, speed that up. The border control bill would have addressed that as well.
Thank you. Same question, Ken.
Yeah, thank you. This is a very, very important topic. I would argue probably the number one issue that I hear at doors, hear out at events and in the community. So, yes, of course, the border, that's a federal issue. There's some stuff that needs to be done up there. But I'm not going to blame the federal government here. I believe that there is action that should have been done and can be done. Republicans have been offering solutions for this for a long time, including residency requirements on the right to shelter, whether it's 6 months or a year. And similarly to what my opponent is saying the federal government is doing to the states, Massachusetts is doing to our towns. This right to shelter and this migrant crisis, which really Massachusetts is a magnet for this issue. So the federal problem exists everywhere, but no state is having as many problems with the sheltering of migrants as we are here. And it's really an unfunded mandate, putting kids into schools when towns aren't prepared. It's extra police calls, it's extra fire calls. This really is an unfunded mandate beyond the $1 billion that's being way over allocated for this situation.
Okay. Did you want to add something?
Well, I did, because when we say unfunded mandate, we should recognize that the state has given money back to the towns that are hardest hit in terms of additional funding for schooling. So it's not a completely unfunded mandate from the state. And I still go back to the issue of how do you expect people to live and not die in the streets or live in our T stations if we do not give them a work permit?
Okay. Ken, another minute.
Yeah, I mean, I would say you ask your selectmen if they think that they're being funded enough to deal with this crisis. I mean, we had people just showing up previously in these towns with school officials and elected officials just not prepared to take them in. And again, the budgets that were already strapped. You have multiple towns in our district that are going to probably have 2.5 overrides in the next 1 to 2 years, if not all of them. And we simply don't have the money. Do not have the revenue at the town level to accommodate this crisis that's being manufactured by the state. This is negligence in its highest form.
Let me ask you both a question, just following up with this. It seems like this problem stems from what's happening in the borders through the federal government. If you could change it and affect policy, what would you do at the border, at the southern borders or the northern borders where people are coming through? What would you change, Ken?
Yeah, I mean, I think just to say really briefly that, you know, border policy, I think, is evidently better 4 years ago, remain in Mexico, things like that. But to be honest, Christine, and not to go against the question here, but I'm running for the 6th Plymouth District. I'm focused on right to shelter. I'm focused on the issue here because I'm not kicking the can down the road. I'm not pointing my finger at anybody. There's a lot of things we can do here in the state, and the right to shelter, the influx of people we have here in Massachusetts, that's the problem that a state legislator can attack. And that's the issue that I'm going to attack.
Same question, Becky. What would you do at the border if
well,
you could have
off,
control
of
federal?
We should acknowledge that none of the towns in our district have been asked to shelter migrants. When it comes to the border, I would look at the fact that the bipartisan border bill was going to put hundreds of additional border agents to avoid unauthorized crossings. The other thing that was going to make a huge difference was putting in hundreds of administrative law judges so that it doesn't take forever.
What would you do?
I would implement these policies so that we have border control agents to control our border, and we have administrative law judges so it doesn't take 5 years to hear a political asylum claim. I don't think we simply say, oh, we no longer offer political asylum in our country, but we control it, we manage it. We make it a humane process and a quick process so that if people come over here with false claims, they quickly get sent back home.
Let me just ask you another follow-up question because this is the issue we get more questions, emails, and calls about. If you had the power to change one thing here statewide in statewide government to affect this, just one thing, what would it be? Becky.
I would work as hard as our governor has been working to get work permits and get people to work. It doesn't cost money if we have these people working. We're in a very low unemployment state. There's a lot of people who could hire people and a lot of people who want to work, but they are not permitted to work until it's at least right now under the federal law. They cannot even apply for a work permit for 180 days. And the border bill would have reduced that to 90 days. And the time for processing has been reduced already from 9 months to 2 months. So we would have people working within 5 months. I would make it shorter if I could, rather than a year and a half. That makes it a lot cheaper to deal with this crisis.
Same question. What would you do, Ken, if you could do the one thing to make a difference?
Yeah, as I mentioned, it's already been offered. Really common sense. The $1 billion is being spent now, last fiscal year and already starting this fiscal year. Residency requirement, whether it's 6 months, a year, whatever it may be, that's what needs to be addressed in the state of Massachusetts. This is a math problem. There's no inflammatory language here. It's a math problem. We cannot afford it. There needs to be a residency requirement.
You're listening to a WATD Political Forum. It's the 6th Plymouth District. We're going to take a quick break and be back right after this.
Can't get enough of everything pumpkin this fall? Have you been looking high and low for the perfect pumpkin to decorate your home? Look no further. Head on over to UCC Norwell's annual Pumpkin Patch Fundraiser. We've got a gorgeous selection of pumpkins and gourds awaiting you. We're open every day in October at 460 Main Street in Norwell. For more information, visit uccnorwell.org.
Something wickedly good is happening in Plymouth October 19th. Join us at Memorial Hall for the Jeff Cohen Charitable Foundation's 28th annual Halloween benefit, a night of fun, fright, and fundraising all to support cancer patients in need. Enjoy live music, dancing, delicious treats, and a thrilling silent auction. Don't forget, the best costume of the night wins a $1,000 cash prize. Tickets are on sale now, but hurry, they're limited. Want to make an even bigger impact? We're seeking generous sponsors and auction items. Your support can change lives. Visit the jccfoundation.org to grab your tickets, become a sponsor, or donate an auction item today. Let's make this Halloween a night to remember together. See you there if you dare.
Looking for a great time for a great cause? Join Cardinal Cushing Centers and the exceptional people with disabilities that they support at their free Fun Run and Harvest Fest on Saturday, October 26th. First, register now at CushingFunRun.org and follow the easy prompts to ask your friends and family to sponsor you. Then arrive at 10 a.m. on October 26th for the pre-race party, followed by the one-mile event. Bring everyone, adults, kids, dogs, strollers, wheelchairs. What a great opportunity to teach about inclusion. Halloween costumes are encouraged. Again, register and start fundraising now at CushingFunRun.org. That's CushingFunRun.org.
studio, and this is a 6th Plymouth District. This is the Forum. I'm Christine James. Tom Gorman is asking questions with me, and we have both candidates here in studio, Becky Coletta and Ken Sweezy. Now, right before the break, we were talking about the migrant crisis here in the state. We're going to switch topics a little bit. This was a question sent in from a listener, and the listener said, "What is your what are your feelings about what is going on with the MBTA Community Zoning Act? Are you for it, against it? Explain your position and thoughts." Let's start with you, Ken.
Yeah, absolutely. This is, I would actually say, the number two issue that I hear most about. Everyone who's involved in going to town meetings knows very well what this issue is about. I believe we're the only state rep district that has two towns that have rejected the zoning. I think it's very likely, with Halifax and Duxbury having it on their town warrants this winter, that we could go up to 80%. A lot of people are upset about this. What this is doing is creating zoning, high-density zoning, in our towns. This directly changes, and I would say ruins, the character of our towns. People moved here for a reason. I love going into the city. People live in the city for the density and the people and everything like that. But that's not why people move down here. These towns are quaint. They have their ponds. We have our conservation land, our historic preservation efforts that are going on. This introduces zoning for high-density housing, and I just don't think it's right. Never mind the fact that our infrastructure down here already can't accommodate droughts and things like that. We have water infrastructure issues in Pembroke. We don't have sewer. We don't have water. There's a lot of issues with this, and I really don't think that the state should be jamming it down.
Okay, same question, Becky.
I don't think it's a good law. It was a Charlie Baker idea. It was a Republican principle of deregulation. Zoning is regulation of private property use. This was deregulation. Let the private market fix our housing issues. In what we've seen this summer was an affordable housing bill that actually addresses it with some amount of money and resources, with a 5.1 bond bill and some ability to have local initiatives that go back and get funded so that these projects that people actually want and need to create housing choice in their community can happen. So the issue about MBTA communities that makes me a bit sad is that there's a lot of misinformation. I spent 6 years on the planning board. I know what site plan review is. I know what zoning rules are. It is not carte blanche. It means that you have to have septic, you have to have stormwater management, you have to address these problems as a developer. And that gets lost on people as we talk about this issue in inflammatory terms.
Okay. Let me give you a little bit more time on this. What do you think would be an answer for having more affordable housing here without this? That's part one. And part two, do you agree with the state attorney general threatening the towns? Two parts. I'll give you a minute for each.
Okay, two parts. Yeah. I'm going to do something very rare here and actually give a little bit of kudos to the legislature. I'm really excited about the accessory dwelling unit provision that was provided in the housing bill right at the end of session. You know, this is not helping developers. This is not changing the character of our town. What it approves is 900 square foot or half of the livable space from the main home, whichever's smaller, to by right build accessory dwelling units. I think that's really great. That's going to allow families who may have elderly parents or kids coming back out of college or starting a family to stay on the property, stay together, stay in the towns they grew up in. This is really exciting. I really think that this is something that can alleviate some of that for the most at-risk people, the communities. So we'll see how this goes. I think we should let it play out before trying to jam a lot of other stuff and artificial, non-market-related things down. And the second part, as far as the Attorney General, I mean, this is just clear-cut, like, state government coming down on our towns, families. It doesn't make any sense. Where it's taxpayer funding, fighting taxpayer funding. Like, lawyers are provided on both sides, and what's going on in Milton is just flat out wrong. The opening arguments went really well last week when the court case just got started, but it's wrong. I really think that if Milton prevails, they're gonna back off. I'm really hopeful that the state is gonna back off. I'm at least hopeful that there can be some sort of revision, that as we get through the remainder of the town meetings, and like I said, potentially having 4 out of our 5 towns reject it, I really hope that the state will see that this is not wanted by our communities and that fighting it in court is not the right way to go about this. And the way that they're being so heavy-handed is not good for anybody.
Same two-part question, Becky. First part about what you think should be done, and second, what you think about the Attorney General.
So it's kind of interesting. I think Ken's answer proves too much. If the state allowing ADUs as of right is legal, then MBTA communities section 3A is legal. They both come under chapter 48, which is how the towns derive their power to exercise their right to zone. So it's not a power question, it's a policy question. I don't think it's a good policy because I think that it is too focused on private market forces having no level of planning. What I would love to see to start to address real housing choice and real affordability issues is so we go back to the towns and say, what is your plan? All of our towns, I look at Duxbury, the median household income is $130,000. The median house price is $863,000. To buy into Duxbury today, you'd need about a $250,000 income. Duxbury's working on affordable housing initiatives, they're working on an affordable housing plan, and they're working on age-friendly communities. We need to go back to the town's plans.
Well, that's part one. Now, part two, what do you think? The state attorney general coming on too heavy and hard or not?
She's enforcing a law. I mean, you know, we can demonize her, and we can make inflammatory rhetoric, but what it comes down to is the guidelines are the issue that really was the most open for discussion at the SJC hearing the other day. They were really focused on whether the guidelines were appropriately passed. Again, those guidelines were developed under Charlie Baker's administration. These were not Governor Healey's guidelines. They've tweaked them to actually make them more friendly to communities. They added mixed use with retail use because that was what communities were asking them for. They've really tried to work with communities to achieve a yes, but it's a law, and I don't know what we expect the Attorney General to do. If it needs change, it needs change at the legislature.
Let's talk about affordable housing then. This is something I've asked a lot of candidates this season, and it's hard to get a number. People always use the term affordable housing. What's affordable? Give me a number. What's an affordable house? So what do you think is affordable? For a young couple starting out, 4 years out of college, want to buy a starter home on the South Shore, give me a number.
Well, I think that all of those people, I've been a realtor, mm-hmm. right? I had my own real estate brokerage. Mm-hmm. I also was president of the Realty Guild of Independent Brokers. I've seen it over the last 6 or 7 years. The most affordable anyone's going to get is about $450,000. Every now and then you can find something that needs to be fixed up in the threes, but it's basically $450,000 and up.
Okay.
If you look at Pembroke, the median home price is $561,000. So houses are not affordable. We know young people are leaving the state. It's a huge issue. This is an issue that way predates people are talking about migrants are creating the issue. Charlie Baker started his housing choice initiative as long ago as 2017. These are issues that have been with us that are creating a less competitive environment and are causing us to lose our young people. I think $350,000 is affordable, and I don't think it's out there.
Okay. What do you think? Give me some numbers, Ken. What do you think is affordable?
Yeah, well, I agree that those numbers aren't out there. So, you know, being a younger person, I want to stay here. I love my community. That's why I'm doing all of this. And it's really hard right now to anybody. Everyone I graduated high school with, the last three of them that have bought homes have been in Nashua, New Hampshire, Manchester, and Derry. Everyone's leaving. Everyone is leaving, and you can't fault them, unfortunately, because there's really no number. That 350 number that is ready to move in doesn't exist. Even 450 doesn't really exist out there. But if I may, with a couple seconds, just respond really briefly. I don't believe that 3A and ADUs contradict one another, because a developer is able to build 15 units per acre, where Joe Smith, who's just building an in-law over his garage, is very, very different. So I believe in that freedom of choice that the individual can do. Obviously, they're still adhering to all the town bylaws and everything like that. But we're talking about two very, very different things, and I don't think they should be conflated as saying the same thing.
30 seconds, Becky. Respond.
I'm talking about legally they're the same thing. Legally, they're both a regulation on what the town's zoning rules can allow. As a policy matter, I agree with you, they're very different. The ADU policy is much more popular than the 3A policy, but legally, they're the same argument.
Okay. You're listening to Political Forum here, the 6th Plymouth District. We'll be back right after this.
Hi, I'm Kelly with Veterinary Chaplaincy Services. Our mission is to support people after pet loss. If you're looking for support after losing your special companion, please visit our website at veterinarychaplaincy.com or call or text our new warm line at 833-4-VET-CHAP. That's 833-483-8247. 833-483-8247.
Something wickedly good is happening in Plymouth October 19th. Join us at Memorial Hall for the Jeff Cohen Charitable Foundation's 28th annual Halloween benefit, a night of fun, fright, and fundraising all to support cancer patients in need. Enjoy live music, dancing, delicious treats, and a thrilling silent auction. Don't forget, the best costume of the night wins a $1,000 cash prize. Tickets are on sale now, but hurry, they're limited. Want to make an even bigger impact? We're seeking generous sponsors and auction items. Your support can change lives. Visit the JCCFoundation.org to grab your tickets, become a sponsor, or donate an auction item today. Let's make this Halloween a night to remember together. See you there if you dare.
WATD's Political Forum continues. Now, back to Studio B. Here's your moderator, Christine James.
Thank you very much. We are back here in Studio B. The 6th Plymouth District, both candidates are in here. We've got Becky Coletta, the Democrat, and Republican Ken Sweezy. Now, right before the break, we were talking a little bit about affordable housing. Again, one of the biggest issues here on the South Shore. Let me just jump ahead and let's not talk about buying a house. What about an apartment? I see what the rents are. They're very high. Again, I'm going to ask for numbers. Ken, what do you think is affordable for an apartment?
Yeah, well,
number.
Yeah, we have a very interesting economy down here in the 6th Plymouth. You know, we go from anything from mom and pop shops and landscaping more inland to shellfishing and lobstermen. And the businesses here are very unique. And I think all the parts of the district have very different needs because obviously that median salary is going to be very different depending on the town. So the needs are very different. We have one of those unique districts. Most go kind of north-south, so they're either coastal or inland. Ours is east to west. So Halifax and Duxbury, obviously those needs are very, very different. Depending on the area, it depends. If you're looking for an exact number, you know, you're not finding anything less really than $2,500 around here, which is basically the rent in the city, which doesn't make any sense to me with the economic opportunities that you have down here being very different. So if the keen on the number needs to come down from there, right? How you do that, you know, we have opportunities. They're building at the center of Pembroke and things like that. A lot of these towns still have to get to their 10%, and whether we like it or not, that's sort of where the law is on 40B right now. So,
same question, Becky. What's an affordable apartment?
I think an affordable apartment would be around $1,900 a month because I'm assuming, you know, people might be making somewhere around $60,000 a year, either alone or together, just looking at kind of a basic starting type wage situation. I don't think it exists. I think Ken's right. This is part of the reason when in Pembroke on the planning board when we're looking at our housing production plan, we said, you know, we kind of need more rental in town. The rental that's going into town center is over 55. We were also looking at multifamily zoning in the industrial district over by Route 3. And when 3A came into effect, the MBTA law came into effect, we changed that from being over 55 to not having age restrictions. You know, a lot of us have known people who don't have, you know, who go through a divorce or something and they need rental housing because they can't buy another house. It just doesn't exist. As a realtor, it's not do I buy or do I rent. There's not much to rent around here, and that's why the prices are high.
Okay. Tom Gorman, question for the candidates.
Well, it touched upon about people leaving the state due to high housing costs. Also, some people are saying it's also because of the high taxes, and just basically it's very expensive state to live in. What can the state do to make it a more affordable place to live?
Let's start with Becky.
Okay. So when I look at taxes, we go up and down in terms of where we stand in terms of whether we actually have a higher tax rate. But I think that when we look at Massachusetts, we have higher tax rates. We also have higher incomes on average than pretty much any other state in the country. I saw just the other day we had the highest weekly wage. So we have high costs, we have high wages. We also need to look at how to take some of the pressure off of property taxes, because property taxes are one of those areas where it doesn't depend on whether you can afford to pay them. It goes by how much value you have in your home. And so I think we really need to look at what we're funding at the state level versus the local level with property taxes. And I think that would go a long way towards particularly older people who are finding it hard to stay in their homes.
Same question, Ken.
Yeah, this is a massive problem. We have the last numbers I've seen were 1,100 people leaving Massachusetts per week completely unsustainable. And the two demographics that that's doing is younger people who can't afford to live here anecdotally. Like I said, you have college students that we have the best universities in the world in Massachusetts, bar none. And students are choosing to go to school in other states. They're deciding to not settle here if they're from out of state, settle here in these high-tech jobs in the healthcare field, biotech, other things like that, that we have a hub for here in Boston, Cambridge, and across Massachusetts. And that's a big problem because the opportunities are elsewhere. Affordability is a holistic problem. And I'm glad you brought that up, Tom, with both housing and taxes. I mean, between not being able to afford to live anywhere near where the jobs are or not being able to keep up with the taxes that we have here. That $1,100, obviously not only younger people, but also well-established people. The millionaire's tax is driving billions of dollars of revenue out of the state. It's a big, big problem. And if we don't reverse course, it's going to continue to be very unfriendly for business and for people that contribute that revenue.
Did you want to add anything else there? Any follow-up question?
Also, some communities have been complaining about the state aid formula being unfair. Do you agree with that?
Let's start with Ken.
Yeah, it is very, very unfair. For people that don't know, whether it's Chapter 70 with schooling, Chapter 90 that funds your roads and everything, there's income requirements, or income portions of the formulas, things like that. As an example, in our district, Pembroke is receiving this upcoming year about $16 million. Duxbury is receiving $6 million. They're heading for a fiscal cliff that they're not going to be able to account for. They are going to have to consider these 2.5 overrides because schooling is becoming such a high cost. The per pupil cost is going up. Administrative costs are going up. So these funding formulas are really, really damaging our towns. And there needs to be a hard look done. They need to be revised or else towns like ours are going to be negatively affected. And that's going to hurt you in your property taxes or you're going to have staffing and cuts to your services in town. So something is going to break and we need to get to the bottom of that before it does so.
Same question, Becky.
So I take sort of a pragmatic approach to this. We've been talking about funding formulas since I first looked at a budget on the Hanson Select Board in 2004. And those of us in higher income towns, and I know we don't feel like we're higher income, but compared to other parts of the state, we have fairly decent incomes. And we've been talking about this funding formula as long as I can remember. And we've struggled with budgets as long as I can remember. And the towns have survived in large part without as many overrides because of new growth. And as the South Shore has filled up, there's less property to develop. So there's going to be less new growth to fill the gap when health insurance premiums and other things go up. So we have an issue. But I think what we really need to start to look at is not just the formula, but whether or not the state, when we talk about unfunded mandates, the question is, what about things like the foundation budget and special education and other things that make up the sense of what each district should spend on something like education?
Any follow up with that? Just want to switch topics here real quickly. On the ballot questions, do you support the state auditor ballot to audit the legislature? Ken?
Yeah, absolutely. Polling in this is one of the most clear-cut I've ever seen. I think it's common sense. We have one of the least transparent state houses in the entire nation. The legislature needs to be much more accountable for what they're doing. I really, really applaud the auditor for the work that she's done, the outreach that she's done. She's a Democrat, and I think she also served in the body, and she understands that there's some stuff they need to open up their books there. You know, whether it's committee votes being kept private or a whole host of other things, the gross amount of NDAs that are required, the non-disclosure agreements that she had, you know, experience and realized that this was a systemic problem. The legislature has a lot of work to do to regain the trust of the people in the Commonwealth, and I really applaud the auditor. It's a yes vote from me all the way, and I really, really encourage you to do so as well.
Same question, Becky.
I think it's going to be very legally complicated because it's unclear what her authority is to audit beyond financials. I think if we give her the right to audit the financials, we already have salaries are already public through see-through. Josh Cutler just spearheaded the pay equity law. That's going to make a lot more information transparent with respect to different types of positions and what they're being paid and what the variety is between one person in one office and one person in another office and what they're being paid. So a lot of that transparency is happening on the financial side. I think it's unclear whether she can do something about the areas of transparency that I actually think we as legislature need to do something about, which are things like committee votes. And honestly, as a staffer up there, I think written testimony that is sent to committee should be made available to the public, written testimony. But some of what we're talking about, it's unclear whether or not constitutionally it's going to create a big mess.
Let me just ask you a quick follow-up. When we talk about the way things happen in the state legislature, it seems like leadership has, they've got the power. Just like the song says, and it's like if you don't vote with leadership, it's hard to get things passed. Do you think things need to change in the State House, Becky?
Yes, and I think that the legislators are the ones who can bring about that change. And it's by building coalitions. It's by going up there and spending time up there and doing the work. You know, I've spent the last 21 years in the district doing the work. I've been at the State House, and I think the people who are successful at getting things passed, the people who are successful at getting money back to their district, are the people who do the work and build the coalitions so that leadership can't simply tell you no, because you're not one person. You're not an island. You've created a coalition of people who care about an issue, have worked the issue, have built outside support for the issue, not just in the State House, but you've brought in the people to the hearings. You've made it clear that it's a priority issue, not just for the legislature, but for the public.
Same question, Ken. What do you think?
Anything absolutely
needs to change?
Oh, 100%. There's a lot that needs to change up there. Absolutely. The consensus is very important. The way I say it is consensus without compromise of your values. There's no doubt I will work across the aisle. I want to work with people. That's why I'm supported by people of all political affiliation or no political affiliation. Independents, Republicans, and Democrats have all endorsed, so that's not an issue for me either. But the problem is we have a State House that has some of the strongest concentration of power in leadership. That's a big problem, especially when you have a supermajority. People like to say, oh, well, the superminority party has no power. That's not true. So first of all, they have a lot of limitations when they go into informal session. The minority can object to what's going on. There's a lot of influence there. And, you know, I think, again, transparency is a big problem. People look at the rates at which your rep, depending on their political affiliation, votes with the speaker. The history of our district or any other district, they vote with the speaker almost every single time. The rates are out of control. There's no independent thinkers up there. We need people that will stand strong and actually vote the way that their constituents want.
Let me jump over to another ballot question. Another one we're getting a lot of interest in is MCAS. Do you think that it should be a requirement for graduation here in Massachusetts? Ken? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The question I am going with, I've had a lot of conversation on with parents of both political leanings. I found this question to be very interesting, actually, because there's yes and no's on both sides. Ultimately, I believe that I'm going no on question two, and I'm also not afraid to say where I stand on the ballot questions. I don't think I heard my opponent give an answer for the first one, but I'm going to go no on question number two. Standards are really, really important. I mean, we have to see a lot of the complaints that I hear about this. You know, people are stressed for the test and everything like that, which I sympathize with. This does not eliminate MCAS. People need to understand what the law is actually doing. It is simply getting rid of the 10th grade passing score you need to graduate. And according to the superintendent in Pembroke Public Schools, if you had to guess in the last 10 years how many students have not graduated because of MCAS testing requirements from the state, zero. It is nearly a moot point in our district, and I don't like having a test that we're paying for that's not actually doing anything either. So,
okay. Becky, I'll give you 30 seconds to address what the answer was on the audit. 30 seconds.
On the audit, yeah. I in the end, I am going to vote yes because I think that it's what the public wants. I do think it's going to get tied up in the courts for many years.
Okay. Now, question that I just asked Ken about MCAS. What are your thoughts? Should they have it to graduate or not? Do you support it or not?
I'm yes on two. Okay. And the reason why I'm yes on two is because for those kids for whom it's an impediment, I think it's a grossly unfair impediment. I look at people, for example, who are in the vocational program. Do we really expect them to spend all of their time, half their time is in the vocational side, and they're learning in a different way on the vocational side, very important learning. But do we really expect that the other side is going to be only focused on MCAS? They have limited class time. I want their teachers to be teaching them what they believe they need. MCAS is going to still exist. And it's, to me, what I always told my son when he was younger was, MCAS isn't judging you. MCAS is assessing how the school is doing. MCAS is telling us whether or not our schools are keeping up. I don't think it should be the one test for whether or not someone is ready and has the skills and information they need to move on in life with a college diploma. I mean, a high school diploma.
We're going to take a quick break here and be back. You're listening to A Political Forum, the 6th Plymouth District on 95.9 WATD.
My name is Envoy Ann Rich, and I would like to invite you to a free health and wellness fair at the Salvation Army Corps and Community Center. We are partnering with the Plymouth Lions Club for this wonderful health and wellness fair event. It will be held on Saturday, October 19th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., and our location is 52 Long Pond Road in Plymouth. For more information, go to saarmyma.org/Plymouth. I'm looking forward to seeing you there.
Looking for a great time for a great cause? Join Cardinal Cushing Centers and the exceptional people with disabilities that they support at their free Fun Run and Harvest Fest on Saturday, October 26th. First, register now at CushingFunRun.org and follow the easy prompts to ask your friends and family to sponsor you. Then arrive at 10 a.m. on October 26th for the pre-race party, followed by the one-mile event. Bring everyone, adults, kids, dogs, strollers, wheelchairs. What a great opportunity to teach about inclusion. Halloween costumes are encouraged. Again, register and start fundraising now at CushingFunRun.org. That's CushingFunRun.org.
Something wickedly good is happening in Plymouth October 19th. Join us at Memorial Hall for the Jeff Cohen Charitable Foundation's 28th annual Halloween benefit, a night of fun, fright, and fundraising all to support cancer patients in need. Enjoy live music, dancing, delicious treats, and a thrilling silent auction. Don't forget, the best costume of the night wins a $1,000 cash prize. Tickets are on sale now, but hurry, they're limited. Want to make an even bigger impact? We're seeking generous sponsors and auction items. Your support can change lives. Visit the JCCFoundation.org to grab your tickets, become a sponsor, or donate an auction item today. Let's make this Halloween a night to remember together. See you there if you dare.
WATD's Political Forum continues. Now, back to Studio B. Here's your moderator, Christine James.
We're back again. The 6th Plymouth District, the candidates are in here. We've got Becky Coletta and Ken Sweezy. We're asking them questions about why they want to be your next state rep. Tom Gorman, what question do you want to ask them?
There's another ballot question this fall is whether tip workers, such as restaurant service, should be paid a wage instead of receiving tips. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, so as far as the language of question five, emphatically no on five. If you talk to workers, if you talk to your local mom and pop restaurants here in the district, nobody wants this. The surveyed workers, it was over 88% didn't want it. I have people coming up to me constantly when I'm out enjoying our great restaurants in the district, asking for no on five signs and asking what's going on with the ballot initiative. Nobody wants this. This was introduced by an outside group outside of Massachusetts for really unknown reasons of what the need is. There's no need. They already are required to make at least minimum wage of $15, including their tips. They're getting paid well above that, again, because we have great employees, great service employees down here in our district, of which live in the district and enjoy our businesses as well. And the restaurant owners and operators, frankly, will not be able to afford this. If you think things are expensive now, this, again, is going to that affordability. If you do this, say goodbye to any cheeseburger or any other meal that's going to be less than $30, $40.
Same question, Becky.
I'm no on five. And this is actually was a bill that was before the committee that I worked on last year. And the reason it's a ballot question is because the legislature also didn't think it was a good idea. The reason I'm against it is because I've heard over and over again from servers and people in the doors even that they're against question five. But the other reason is that this question would allow pooling of tips, and the tips could be shared with back of the house and possibly even managers. That's never happened before. We've had tip pooling before. but never tip pooling where the back of the house and the managers get to share in those tips that are earned by the front of the house. So it's the tip pooling piece that really has me concerned, and we're already covering our servers who don't make as much in tips with the mandate that their pay be brought up to minimum wage if their tips don't get them.
Let me ask you another question, two parts. One, how many doors do you estimate you've knocked on? And two, with the people that you talk to in the district, what do they tell you their two big issues are? Start with you, Ken.
Yeah, great question. You'd think I'd lost a lot of weight with the amount of doors we've done. It's been a few hundred miles. Luckily, they're all apps now. We don't have to use paper or anything, so we have all the data. But we just broke a couple weeks ago our 10,000 doors for my campaign team, of which I've done more than 50%. So probably somewhere in the 5 to 5,500 doors, which usually equates in our district to about 500 plus miles. So that's what I've walked starting back in April, had some amazing conversations. People are really plugged into this race. This is a really important one, and we have so many issues going on, many of which we've talked about. I really think that between the migrant issue, affordability, MBTA zoning, those are the three that you hear across all the towns. And then obviously you hear a lot of other town-specific issues, right? We have water infrastructure problems in Pembroke. We have beach access problems, of which I'm a huge volunteer and advocate for. And there's a lot of great work being done by volunteers on Save Duxbury Beach, trying to make sure that our recreation is protected over there. You have a host of other things like VOTEC access in Pembroke that they can opt into the district or not. So a lot of specific issues as well.
Look at that, a jam, the bell jam. This is a first. Same question, Becky. How many doors you knocked on? What are the issues that the people out in the district are telling you?
So we started knocking doors in February before we had access to a way to count our door knocking. We believe that we've knocked over 11,000, the doors of 11,000 voters. We've been knocking continuously, as well as meeting one-on-one and having house parties and having events to hear what people are thinking. I would say reproductive rights comes up a lot more than you think. People say, I am not going to go back on reproductive rights. And that's a really important issue and a really important reason why they want Democrats to win this fall. Affordability happens all the time. And the other thing that we don't really talk about as much in these kind of forums, because it's more personal and it's hard to talk about publicly, is mental health and addiction. There's a lot of people struggling out there. And it's a lot of people, even older people, who are dealing with depression and isolation.
I'm glad you brought that up, because addiction, that's something that's come up, I would say, in the 30 plus years I've been here. That has come up, whether it's whatever the drug of choice is at the time, and they seem to be getting more and more powerful, more and more dangerous, and cheaper, which is very scary. Some of the stories we've covered over the years about some of the people that get sucked into us, all ages, all socioeconomic backgrounds. And, you've heard law enforcement say we can't arrest our way out of this, and yet Plymouth County has made some good headway here with some of the programs that are now being modeled nationally. What else needs to happen with treating addiction here? It has affected more than one generation. Becky.
So the other day I was in a room with seven people, and four of the people there had lost someone in their family to opioids or fentanyl, most likely overdoses. It's a real issue still, and the fentanyl is making it an even bigger issue. So I think part of it is law enforcement. I do think Plymouth County Outreach is an amazing program that we were lucky to have started here, and it's a national model for how to get the police working together with social service agencies to address addiction issues. We have wonderful programs like Drug Story Theater in our district, but we also need to increase access to mental health services, and I would like to see more peer support groups that are funded in a way that allows them to also have some professional involvement. And I was just talking to someone the other day, part of it is reimbursement rates and getting people. I have a master's in social work. I went back to other work in part because the reimbursement rate makes it very difficult to stay a social worker and have children.
Same question, Ken. What do you think?
Sorry, I'm going to address super fast. There's on average over two people per household registered voter, so the doors of 11,000 voters is only about 5,000 doors, if I understood that correctly. As far as mental health and
That's not true. Okay.
As far as mental health and drug addiction, I think I would agree that Plymouth County Outreach is a great organization. And we're super lucky in Plymouth County to have great elected representatives like DA Tim Cruz, as well as Sheriff McDonald. Their reentry programs are second to none in the state, and I would say in the nation. Plymouth County is one of the safest counties in the country. So we have a lot of good programming that's coming out of there as well. So when people do, unfortunately, because of these issues, get into the criminal justice system, they're able to come out and reenter at a better rate, and the recidivism is much lower here in Plymouth County. So we're very fortunate.
If you're known for one issue, if you get this seat, something that you want to champion, just one issue, what would your issue be, Ken?
The issue that goes across all districts, all towns, the immigration issue touches so many things between budget and housing and affordability and everything. So the immigration crisis has to be solved.
Okay. What would your one issue be, Jeff? You could just pick one, Becky.
Affordability. I really think that we have to solve the problem of affordability. People need to be able to buy homes and live here at all stages of their life, so that the communities can continue to be the diverse, welcoming places they have been in our lifetimes.
Now we get to go to the lightning round. Here's the favorite part of this. We're going to ask you very quick questions, and you're going to give either a yes or no answer or one or two sentences. And, of course, if you're a regular listener, you know what my first question is. Plymouth County government, stay or go? Ken?
Stay.
Okay. Becky?
Stay. Stay.
All right. What kind of Republican or Democrat are you? How would you describe yourself? Two sentences. Becky.
I'm practical and pragmatic at the same time that I hold dear the values of the Democratic Party when it comes to protecting the middle class, when it comes to protecting workers' rights.
Okay, two sentences. How would you describe yourself, Ken? Two sentences.
I'm a Ken Sweezy Republican. I am a fiscal conservative that's a son of the Commonwealth.
Okay. Any questions?
Should NIPS be banned?
Ken, yes or no?
I'm pro-freedom, so no.
Okay, what about NIPS or no NIPS? It's fun to say that.
I think NIPS should be banned at the state level. I think we ban drunk driving. We ban a lot of things. I think
lightning.
No NIPS.
Lightning, okay. You a good cook, Becky?
Yes or no? Cook like to defuse a nuclear bomb.
Okay, I was going to say, what's your best recipe?
A recipe like you defuse a nuclear bomb.
Wow, Ken, anything better at your house? You a good cook?
I was going to say, when I follow the directions, it usually comes out okay.
No dinner with these people. Okay, what we're going to do now is jump to your closing statements. Remember, these are 1 minute long as opposed to the 2 minute, and we're going to flip the order that we started with. And I see a big sigh of relief over there. So we are going to flip the order now. Of course, I can't find my... Here we go. We started with Becky. We went to Ken. So we're going to flip it now, close with Ken, and then go to Becky.
Thank you, everybody, again, for joining, particularly the voters, our moderators, our hosts at WATD, Local Scene, my opponent as well. Again, I think it's always great when we get to talk about the issues. I think that my real-life experience between law enforcement, the private sector, local government volunteering has really prepared me well for this. I've been out there the last 3 years meeting people, going to events, knocking on doors. I've come to see you, and if you haven't seen me, I promise you that you will before November. I have a really, really broad coalition of support. I'm very proud of the endorsements that I have. You see some policy differences between my opponent and I, but it's also a philosophical difference. I believe that you're better off having your money in your pocket, not going to the state coffers. I believe that control should be as local as possible at all times. I want to support our great first responders in our district and make sure that we address immigration. As mentioned, the coalition's great. I have elected Republicans, Democrats, and Independents. I'm the only candidate in this race to have a select board member from every single town supporting me. And I'm very proud that the entire select board of Pembroke, four of whom served with Becky previously, are also endorsing me. So if they're supporting me, okay. I hope you will too on November 5th.
Let's go. That's Ken Sweezy. Let's go to Becky Coletta. Closing comment.
I speak to you today as an experienced leader and advocate for the South Shore region, not just as a candidate interested in getting elected. My diverse background as a business attorney, a local public official, and social worker gives me a well-rounded perspective to address our district's most critical issues. I pride myself on my ability to bring people together. I have a unique understanding of government at various levels, which positions me to represent the interests of the 6th Plymouth District effectively. I have the relationships, I have the experience that's going to allow me to bring back resources and effectuate policy change. I will bring practical solutions to address our community's pressing needs. I aim to work collaboratively with local leaders on issues that directly affect our residents. I want to do the work of solving problems instead of fixing blame so we can move forward together.
Thank you. That was a closing statement of Becky Coletta. You've been listening to a WATD political forum here, the 6th Plymouth District, both candidates here in studio, Democrat Becky Coletta, Republican Ken Sweezy. I'm your moderator, Christine James, Tom Gorman asking questions, Charlie Fulmer timing you all, and of course our media partner, Local Scene, PAC TV. We've got our engineer here, Larry Nelson. Stay tuned to WATD for complete election night coverage. That's right, we go on the air at 8, and we'll bring you the results of all the races with the whole political posse. We've got reporters in the field. Remember, get out and vote. If you don't vote, you don't have a voice. I'm Christine James, 95.9 WATD.